This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals the hidden plain, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Yadiyah program. Happy Shabbat, Shabbat Shalom. JB, I'm glad to have you back. And Kirk, good to have you back after your travels.
Thank you. I love the both of you.
You know, I was promised that we were going to begin at Mizmor 103 this evening. And I just had the occasion to read through the last three or four statements of the fifth Mizmor, which is the thing that we concluded last program. And I don't want to review that just because of how awful, really, these last days are going to be, and how much the Christian anticipation of a second coming, of God coming with open arms, and he's going to love all the little children, and all the little Christians are going to go to heaven. The antithesis of that is what's going to occur. Mm-hmm. It's going to be wholesale eradication on a scale that the world cannot even imagine. This is what it says. For truthfully, there is nothing that is firmly established or trustworthy in their mouths, nothing that is reliable, enduring, or steadfast among their words. Literally nothing secure or settled in their speech. Their inner nature is psychologically predisposed to be destructive. With their malicious speech, which is counterproductive, with devastating consequences, because they are relentless liars. Their throat has become an open grave. They flatter, and they are seducing smooth talkers who consistently mislead, providing hopeful and encouraging opinions which are inaccurate and divisive. That is a wonderful summary of religious pastors and priests, and of almost all of those in politics today. There isn't anything that you can trust that comes out of their mouths. There's nothing settled or secure in their speech. Their inner nature is psychologically predisposed to be destructive. Their words are counterproductive. There's devastating consequences. They're relentless liars. Their throat is an open grave. Ah, they say things that sound so politically correct, so reassuring, so hopeful. And yet it's all for naught. All inaccurate. There are really very few of us who have been blessed to uncover the truth, to go in the very place it has been all along in Yahweh's testimony. All we have done to differentiate ourselves from those that Yahweh was speaking is to take his word seriously, to translate them out of the oldest extant sources as accurately and as completely as is possible. Dode writes, hold them accountable. Make them suffer the consequences because they remain liable, God. They have fallen of their own accord, having chosen to bring this upon themselves through their own advice and counsel, their customs and traditions, their proposals and practices, especially their conspiracies and religions, which have taken countless others to where they themselves are headed. God cannot be just if he does not impose justice. He can't be fair if he doesn't hold those who have harmed others accountable. And while I am certain that God is bothered by man's vicious nature and therefore regarding rapists and murderers and the like, he's far more interested in exposing and condemning those who have eradicated billions of souls through their religion and their politics. You know, when we read this, it is impossible to rationally view what Dode is saying, and these are his words in the fifth Mizmor, as if he is speaking of an individual that he dislikes. I know there's a lot of places where Dode speaks of his enemies, and there's this inclination to bypass the obvious and say, well, you know, Dode made a lot of foes. There's not a single place, including here, that Dode is talking about a specific individual who bothered him for some reason. These aren't personal grievances and personal grudges. The things he's lashing out against are pervasive within the society. Now, the only things that were pervasive in the society that were based upon public declarations and speeches are religion and governance. Now, today you could add societal customs and conspiracies to that, along with the propaganda that goes along with patriotism. But that's really it. So Dode is saying they need to be held accountable. And it's true. You know, we talked about this a number of programs ago where I don't think that the victims of religion, the victims even of things like the Holocaust that have died separated from God, are going to be awakened to be judged. I think that would be cruel.
Cruel.
God, it's just unlike Yahweh. But they ought to be awakened to see that those who maligned them, those who tortured them, those who killed their children are held accountable. They deserve that. And the people, like the Germans that killed 1 million Jewish babies, and all of those that went along with the leadership that engaged in that kind of behavior, they need to be held accountable. And those who were victimized by them need to witness them being sentenced and punished for what they've done. All of the Roman Catholic popes and cardinals and bishops and priests that have led people astray for their own empowerment, for their own aggrandizement. All of those who are not going to enter heaven because of the deception that they perpetrated, they deserve to see those who led them astray held accountable. The Christians that Paul duped ought to see his trial. Their souls are not going to follow him into Sheol, and they'll simply cease to exist afterwards, but it's closure. And I think they deserve that. I think that's what Dode is saying, that there has to be a consequence. He says, cast them out and banish them, along with the great abundance and widespread nature of their revolting rebellions, which are contrary to the way, because indeed they have been contentious in their defiance against you, and have bitterly opposed you, anguishing and provoking you. Those who claim to speak for God are the same people who are provoking God. The person who is duped by the pastor isn't of concern to Dode or to God, but the person doing the deceiving is. And it's not just that what they're saying is untrue. By promoting a myth that Paul wrote Scripture, that he was an apostle for God, that faith in Jesus Christ will save, and that the Torah has been annulled, those people deserve eternal damnation, and they're going to get it. Cast them out and banish them. So now, let all who take refuge in you, after they're all gone, letting everyone who places their trust in you, relying on you, to keep them safe, rejoice and be glad. Furthermore, let them choose to sing uplifting and joyful songs. Cover and clothe them so that those who love your name will rejoice in having chosen you. Yes, indeed. You commend, favor, and bless, getting down on your knees to lovingly and beneficially lift up those who are right and therefore innocent, correct and thus vindicated, Yahweh, with a protective covering for the entire individual, enveloping and surrounding them such that you can accept him, favoring him by restoring the relationship. Sounds a lot like he's talking about the garment of light that we saw in his words and spoke about so many years ago. Mm-hmm. That by covering us in this garment of light, we appear perfect in his eyes, which is how we are declared innocent. So that's the fifth Mizmor, just verses 9 through 12. There will be a happily ever after celebration. But there's going to be a lot of goodbyes and good riddance before we get there. Mm-hmm. Well, now that we better understand the role Dode plays in communicating God's message, I'd like to consider one of his most uplifting Mizmor Psalms. It's the 103rd. It's the antithesis of how religious people perceive the God of the Old Testament. In fact, if Yahweh inspired Dode to sing these thoughts, and he did, then the Christian New Testament was wholly unnecessary, and Paul's letters were slanderous. And if not, then the God of Christianity can't be trusted. The 103rd Mizmor begins uniquely, suggesting that it was written either for Dode, to Dode, or concerning Dode, even on the wisdom of approaching God's beloved Son. Now, that may sound a bit odd, that the author of the psalm would write this to himself, even of himself, and especially about approaching him. And the role he plays is Yahweh's only Mashiach, his chosen Melech, his Ben, his Shemach, and Nabi. That would be his Messiah, his King, his Son, his branch, and his prophet. The only person who embraced all of these titles. It's wholly appropriate for God to devote a psalm to this individual. That said, I suspect that for Dode or concerning Dode are the best ways to render La Dode, because it's clearly this man's expression of his affection for Yah. I see Dode, and I think you guys do as well, as the antidote for Judaism, as the religion protest that only rabbis can interpret the Torah. Baghdad wasn't a rabbi. He said it. Islam, where deceiving and dying are encouraged, and their God bears a different name, is indeed destroyed by Paul's letters, and especially Christianity, which purports that the Torah cannot save. Yah's songwriter is even the cure for the supposed enlightened ways of multicultural socialist secular humanists and political correctness, and that reason trumps illusions. Dode, above all, was reasonable. As such, the surest path to learning the truth and approaching God on his terms is through Dode's lyrics, and it's words like these. This is for Dode, La Dode, to my beloved, concerning David and even approaching Dode. My soul appreciates and acclaims its association with Yahweh, and all that is within me his set apart name. Mizmor, Psalm 103:1. My soul, my consciousness. You know, the soul, much misunderstood. It's we prefer in today's time to talk about our spirit. We don't have a spirit.
No.
We do have a soul. And our soul is all we get to take with us into the grave and to eternity. Our soul represents, in its most fundamental nature, our ability as animals to observe our environment and respond. And plants can't do that.
No.
But animals can. They can see or smell or feel or taste what is around them. And they can respond to what they observe. And so our soul fundamentally is that. But it's also who we are. Our soul will compartmentalize our personalities, our aptitudes, our abilities, our attitudes are all taken with us via our soul. So when we get to Shamayim in the seventh dimension with Yahweh, we are going to be different because every soul is different. We all have different personalities, different perspectives, different aptitudes and attitudes. And we get to take them with us.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good. I think that makes heaven richer. And so he's saying, my soul appreciates and acclaims Barak. This is a tough one to translate because Barak is almost always rendered bless. And, you know, how do you say, my soul blesses its association with Eth, Yahweh? That sounds pretty silly, doesn't it? So we have to look into what other attributes Barak carries with it. So commends, adores, is thankful for the goodness of something. It appreciates and claims, seeking to share the blessings and benefits of its association with Yahweh. That's why, to a large degree, translation isn't a science. There isn't one way to translate a word. You've got to look at the context and say, all right, what are the attributes of this word? Just like we as our souls have attributes, well, so do words. Souls have words, have attributes, they have personalities. They have proclivities. You know, they're good and bad words, happy words, sad words. But his soul appreciates and acclaims is, I think, is the best way to translate that. Its association with. S is also, so we're dealing with nefesh, which very few people understand, which is our soul, our consciousness, our ability to observe and respond, appreciates and acclaims Barak, a unique rendering of Barak. And then F, its association with. 99.9% of the time, and that might be a slight exaggeration, maybe it's only 99.3% of the time, English Bibles ignore Eth. In fact, if you were to look up Eth in almost any lexicon, the first thing you would see is not translated.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But if it's a perfectly good word, why would Yahweh include a word that you're not to translate?
I have a whole page on there somewhere.
But F, it means it's associated with. It's a relational term that draws a connection between things. You know, that which is according to, that's its association with Yahweh. And all that is within me, who again appreciates and acclaims, is Kodesh Shem. Or in Hebrew, is Shem Kodesh, set apart name. Mm-hmm. Now, why would Yahweh use Kodesh to describe his name? How is a name set apart? I mean, I understand the set apart spirit. The most set apart, the land and the Torah and Yosha are set apart. Set apart is a powerful concept. It means it's part of something set apart from it. So anything that is set apart is actually part of the greater whole and separated from the greater whole as part of it for some particular function.
Yes.
So why would a name be set apart?
Well, Yahweh, if you look at his name, I'm guessing, I would assume it's because he is set apart to do this one thing. People that observe, he lifts down, reaches down, lift up. Is that quote?
Yeah, I think so. I think that at its core, set apart is why it's the thing that Yahweh uses to, for example, describe the Shabbat. Why is the Shabbat different than any other day? Well, the idea with the Shabbat is a special day. The idea with Yahweh's name is it is a special name. With the Shabbat, the thing that is special is that it's a day dedicated to the not ordinary. So by being set apart, it is not ordinary, not common. It has nothing to do with the doctrines, the social customs, the conspiracies, the politics or the religion, the common things of mankind. So set apart would be distinct from that which is common. You know, when Yahweh says that few find the way to life and many find the way to death and destruction, those in the covenant are set apart. They're special. They're unique. They're not part of the common. So, now that's what I think it means. Now, there's another possibility here. So, set apart name would mean that the name is the antithesis of common. It is unique. It is preferential. It is important. It is rare. It is distinct from the things of man. Then there's the most fundamental way to look at set apart. Now, if you want to look at it the most fundamental way, then the world has a major problem. What if Yahweh was using set apart in this case, the same way he uses it to describe the set apart spirit? That his name is part of him, set apart from him for a particular purpose, to introduce us to him. Under that basis, it's not just a name. This name is part of Yahweh. Now, if that's the case, and that's what Kodesh means, then the world's in a whole world of hurt.
Let's see.
Yeah. I mean, there isn't a single religion, a single political doctrine. There's no one out there.
Nowhere.
That is doing what does here, appreciating and acclaiming its association with Yahweh, and that all that is within him is set apart name. No one else is doing that. The tiny group of people who listen to this program and read these books and are part of the covenant community, we all love his name. Can't say it enough. Recognize how important it is. Recognize how few people know it. In fact, if it were commonly known and commonly used, it would no longer be set apart. But I think God here is saying that his name is literally part of him. So it's not just a name, and he doesn't care what you call him so long as you call him. That myth goes away. Jesus and Allah, Vishnu, are clearly not part of him. But Yahweh is part of him. We need to know that when we're saying Yahweh, we are clinging on to, we're holding on to, we're reverberating something that is part and parcel of the creator of the universe. That he has given us that aspect of his very nature. Now, I think there's a third possibility. And, you know, you guys feel free to add or just detract from this, but let's look at the components that make up his name. Do those components that make up his name define who he is? A forearm. An upper arm reaching down, a forearm reaching out, an open hand.
Welcome.
Two, yes, a father reaching out to lift up his children, to welcome them, you know, inviting them, shaking their hands, greeting them. And then two people, it would turn out it would be a male and a female because the following, the first hey is masculine, the second one is feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Two people, mother and father, husband and wife, Abraham and Sarah, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
With the tent peg, that which adds to and enriches and
makes
it real. Right, makes it a connection between them.
Mm-hmm. It's always recognized that the hand is the strength and power to do something. So is the authority. And think of Yahweh as also the authority and power to pull off what he's claiming he's going to do.
Right. So does his name define him?
Absolutely. Well, not in total, but certainly in this regard, yes.
Now, one of the things we did not mention is holy. Kodesh is almost always rendered holy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand holy.
No.
What does holy mean? Where do they get holy? Why would you do that unless it's from Choli?
Yeah.
Did you ever look at Choli?
I looked at it a lot.
What'd you find? Oh, that's curious. What'd you find?
Well, I was looking up holy, and I was trying to figure out. I read everything everyone has to say about it from all different sources, and I was trying to say, well, why do they use it for a Kodesh to be set apart when it's supposed to be sacred? It has all these underpinning religious tones, and I looked through a word search, one of the little word searches programs I have, and it will come up, and it will say chol. Now, chol is profaneness. The root is just filled with negative. That's the chet lamb. So that's the root of it. And choli is sickness. It's, my God, it's every kind of disease, mostly in reference to religions, politics, so forth. It just goes on and on. It would whirling around, circular reasoning. All those things are encompassed in Choli. So why would you choose something that's totally the opposite of what Yahweh is seeking?
And because so, if you're worshiping the Lord,
then that's
Choli is an apt depiction of your Holy Ghost.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Bad, but accurate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Dode, whom Yahweh presents as the most important individual in human history, past, present, or future, is acclaimed because of his relationship with God. Theirs is the most empowering and enduring love story ever told. You know, you have to be really, really careful, and we went through this now three programs ago, with this threat that Christians have over homosexuality, because God actually doesn't condemn it. But men loving other men, like I'm constantly accused of having a bromance, that's the funny term, with Dode, that I admire the man. I admire his ability to write, to think, to show backbone and character. You know, I also find lots of things that are really irritating about Dode, but it makes him complete, it makes him real. And so for a man to have an appreciation for the qualities of another man, that's fine. Yahweh presents himself mostly with masculine attributes, father, for example, ram, for example, and yet he clearly loves this man. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, we ought to be able to find people who inspire us. And I actually think that Dode, now this sounds crazy, I know. I actually think that Dode inspired you. Like, I know he did.
Well, he quoted him. I mean, gosh.
Yeah, that's the answer.
That's
Dode, since Yahweh quoted Dode, that, yeah, then Dode inspired you.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I get it. Yahweh inspired Dode 99.999999 billion times more than Dode inspired Yahweh. But nonetheless, if you're a dude and you can inspire God, man, that puts you in, well, in the company. So this is a powerful statement. My soul appreciates and acclaims its association with Yahweh, and all that is in me is set apart to name. Those who know and love Yahweh adore his name. If nothing else, Dode has made this abundantly clear. If you refer to your God as the Lord, as Hashem, as Adonai, as Jesus or Christ, your God isn't God. If you do not know his name, you do not know him. Guys, I would be a very, very rich man if I had a buck for every time somebody wrote me or said something critical based upon my overwhelming fixation upon love affair with, appreciation for Yahweh's name. And yet, no matter how many harsh things people say, that is where God wants us to be. He wants all of us to share these same characteristics, to be as in love with the Yahweh's name as we are with anything we can imagine. As Dode says, all that is within me appreciates and acclaims its association with Yahweh and his set apart name. I'm not sure that there's anything more important. You know, not the 10 statements etched in stone, not the covenant, not the Moed Mikra, the invitations to meet with God, not the Torah, not the prophets, not even Dode or Yosha, not Moshe. I don't think there's anything more important than Yahweh's name.
You know, Moshe, that's all Moshe had. He introduced him, Yahweh introduced himself to him, told him he was Hayah first, so he'd understand. And then he told him he was Yahweh, and he responded just to that. That's
yes.
Skipping a lot of points. A lot of points.
Yeah, you know, that was so amazing because, you know, Yahweh said, I want you to go with me to Egypt to free my people. And, you know, and Dode said, no, not going to do that. No. I really want you to do it. Oh, no, I stutter. I want you to do it. Nah, find somebody else. And God get upset with him. You know, and then he negotiated and said, what if I have your brother? He is a really big-time speaker. Have him speak for you. And Dode's nonplussed about this whole thing. And then the turning point with him is exactly as you said, Kirk. He says, all right, if I were to do this thing, who would I tell the children of Israel has sent me? God's first statement just stupefies the masses because they want to cite it like nothing followed it. And they don't understand what God said or the point he was making. Ehiya, Asher, Ehiya. I was, I am, and I will be. To show the way to the benefits of the relationship, the I am, was, and will be. Hiya. So then tell the children of Israel that Yahweh has sent you. It is the only name that I wish to be known and remembered by. So he didn't just tell him his name. He told him the verb, he provided the verb upon which his name was based, and it can be used to pronounce it.
What more could you ask for?
What more could you ask for?
Probably nothing more. He took it.
It was enough for Toad, right? Or enough for Moshe. He said, yeah, let's go. Yeah, let's go. There are very few things, and perhaps nothing, that Yahweh values more than us knowing and using his name. And there are very few things, and perhaps nothing, that Yahweh hates more than men changing or nullifying his name.
One thing he says he won't forgive.
One of the ten statements that's etched in stone, and it's unforgivable. That means that every religious person in the world who is part of the great cover-up, the removal of Yahweh's name 7,000 times from his Torah, prophets, and Psalms is unforgivable. His next line, Psalm 103:2, my soul appreciates and acclaims. Again, Barak commends and adores, lauds and extols, is grateful for the marvelous nature of seeking and sharing the blessings and benefits of my relationship with Eth Yahweh, and will never overlook any of his accomplishments and resulting benefits. Wow. So we've gone from his name to now appreciating and claiming his relationship such that he is mindful of, properly responds to, everything that Yahweh has accomplished and the resulting benefits. Well, what has Yahweh accomplished? What's the benefit?
You mean?
We'll start at the beginning.
Yeah.
In the beginning, he created the universe,
of course,
and then conceived life.
With all light.
That's a pretty good start. We wouldn't be here. There wouldn't be a here.
No common sense.
And we wouldn't be alive. So that's a really good start. You know, his resumes go, I created the universe and conceived life. I'm the author of it. I didn't decode the human genome. I wrote it.
I wrote the code.
Okay, that's a good start. That's a good start. Let's see, have I written anything? Oh, yeah, Torah, Prophet, Psalms. Any particular skill? Oh, yeah, prophecy. Really good at that. Perfectly accurate, 100% accurate on all of my presentations of the past, present, and future, because I have experienced the entirety of the past, the present, and the future. Wordsmith, you're pretty good at that, too. Do anything would be considered noteworthy beyond these, you know, just accomplishments, these things? Oh, yeah, I served as the Passover lamb.
Well,
I took the iniquity of the world upon myself and suffered the penalty in Sheol with my soul. And then saw to it that that would all be for good, so that you could all be part of my family. Oh, and I'm a share the wealth kind of guy. I'm the ultimate benefactor. Yes, I do own the entire universe, but I'm here to give it away to members of my family.
Okay.
How's that for a resume?
That's hard.
Now, with that kind of resume, wouldn't you think that rather than being the thousand or so of us that celebrate his name and know and respond to what he is offering, recognizing what he expects in return, rather than a few thousand of us, wouldn't you expect that there would be
standing room
several
only.
Billion?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to know? And you know what's amazing about that resume? He's approachable and humble. Fun to be around. Delightful.
Hates the Lord and lording over him.
That's the opposite of that. Doe's association with the Iowa was multidimensional, as ours should be as well. It was intellectual and emotional, engaging and conversational, inspiring and pragmatic, enlightening and enriching. I mean, think of that for a moment. Intellectual and emotional, engaging and conversational, inspiring and pragmatic, enlightening as well as enriching. He was a brilliant and receptive student, studying under the perfect teacher. And everything he learned, he shared, never overlooking or omitting anything with respect to his life with Yah. Therefore, we can benefit from Kol Gimul Hu, everything he, Yah, has done and the kindness he has shown, all of his accomplishments and resulting benefits, in the same manner enjoyed by Yahweh's most celebrated son. The gift of Dote.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure, it's the gift of Yahweh. But would we know about it? At least to understand it?
No.
No, without Dote. Did Yosha say any of this?
We have nothing recorded in Hebrew.
No. Dote's commitment to share everything he learned from God over his lifetime in the center of Yah's universe makes him uniquely important to God and to us. When we read and respond to his testimony on behalf of Yahweh, we are rewarded to nearly the same degree. I have to say nearly. And that even sounds optimistic, if you will. In some ways, anyway. Dote is inheriting the entire earth. He's going to be king of the earth. Dote is the firstborn who's going to get the lion's share, a double share of the universe. Okay. So, Kirk, you and I and JB, you know, we may only get a 50 galaxies.
Hold on.
How long it takes to get the galaxy?
Whatever shall I do?
What shall we do with our time?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'm cutting you short. Maybe you'll get a few more than that.
Yeah, okay.
Without any responsibility, with nothing but opportunity. And I'm really glad that Yahweh has a firstborn. You know, someone, you know, from whom he expects a lot. It's a great example for us. And you may think, oh, but you know, Dort had all those flaws. He was a bad boy with Bathsheba and did some other things that he ought not have done. I'm here to tell you that Dote was loved by Yahweh, and Yahweh said he's right and he's vindicated. And Yahweh
the other thing that Did he ever do anything that Yahweh said, I can't forgive this?
No.
No, and he was always fighting against religion. He had a lot of personal flaws. Run ethical with women and some friends from time to time. But, come on. This man, he never missed a beat on what was most important to Yahweh.
Never.
That's where we ought to be.
After looking or letting us know exactly where he stood in relationship to Yahweh, Dode posted a series of rhetorical questions, all of which were designed to encourage us to come to the same conclusion. Yahweh alone saves. And at this point in time, there was only one way for God to achieve this result. Through the Torah. Through the Torah's presentation of the Beirith and Mikra. I remember a couple of days ago having a conversation among family. And we were talking about whether or not Dode needed Yosha to fulfill Pesach for him to be considered right and therefore vindicated with God. And I took a really unpopular position in that conversation, and I said no. And I want to share why I said no. And I could be wrong on this, but when Yahweh established the idea of the Pesach lamb for eternal life and set that example for his children in Mitzrayim, in the crucible of Egypt, and they did as Yahweh instructed, I think they received the benefit of the sacrificial lamb. And mind you, the sacrificial lamb is nourished the families. They had a wonderful barbecue. But I think they benefited from it. I think that as Dode and others answered the invitation to participate in the Moed Mikra and came to understand what they represent, that Yahweh's promise prevailed for them, that Pesach would open the doorway to life and matzah would perfect them, and that Pukurim would cause them to be children born into Yah's family, and that on Shavuah they would be enriched and empowered so that they could be effective troubadours on Teruah, all culminating with Yahweh's return and the reconciliation of his children on Kippurim, so that we can return to Eden and camp out with God on Sukkah. I think that the promises were legit, that the people who answered God's invitation and acted upon it received the benefit. I think that Yosha, fulfillment of Pesach, and Yahweh's soul's fulfillment of matzah, and the Spirit's role in Mukurim, transformed the idea of celebrating Pesach such that the blood of the sacrificial lamb could actually be sprinkled on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, and that we could do these things in conjunction with Yahweh's home, the temple. That so much of and the Loewe would provide a role. So much of what was prescribed can't be done anymore.
Yeah.
And it's kind of my assumption that what Yosha did, and Yosha is simply Yahweh saving us, set apart from Yahweh, that what he did is enable us to benefit from, partake in Pesach, so that understanding it and capitalizing upon it, answering it, sufficient, that we don't have to bring the lamb into the house 4 days early and then prepare it in a certain way, that we can go to the grocery store and buy our lamb, and we can bring our grocery store bought lamb into the house and put it in the fridge for 4 days before Pesach. But it's really just celebrating our understanding of what these symbols mean. And I think, to a large degree, that was Yosha's purpose in fulfilling it, along with Yahweh saying to Abraham and Isaac, don't harm the boy. I'll provide the lamb. He's just doing what he was promised to do. Anyway, so I think those are some of the things that Dode came to appreciate what Yahweh had done, and him being right about it is because Dode could answer the questions that he's going to ask, not because he was good, because he wasn't. And I think that the same conditions apply to the rest of us. When it comes to establishing a relationship with God and to our salvation, being good won't do us any good. Being correct will make everything right. So this is Psalm Mizmor 103:3. Who? Indicating either that a question is being asked or that an answer is being addressed. Who forgives? Removing your culpability, freeing you of all of your errant thinking, wrongdoing, erroneous statements, and distorted opinions. La, kol, eon, ata. And who heals and restores, rafa, all your diseases and disabilities? La kol tachumuwm. T-A-C-H-A-L-U-W-Y-M, the plural. So who, from ha, forgives and removes your culpability, freeing you? Salah, pardons you, releasing you from any association with all of your errant thinking, wrongdoing, erroneous statements, and distorted opinions. I think we all have some of those. From every one of the times you've twisted or perverted the truth. And who heals and restores, promotes restoration for those who are injured and diseased, repairing and curing all of your diseases and disabilities, every one of your ailments and impairments, all of your tormenting pains and grievous plagues. You know, who can cure you from having been religious? That's the ultimate cancer. That's a question.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that statement, guys? It's a question that I think Dode clearly knew the answer to. We all know the answer to.
It's only Yahweh, obviously, of course, but I was interested about what you had said along those lines about Yahweh. If Yahweh saved me, did Dode need Yosha to save him, or was he saved?
I don't think so.
The first time you told me that, I didn't like that. I couldn't wrap my head around it. I didn't dislike it. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I was saying, wait a minute. That's
okay. It's okay. I don't like it.
No, but the point was, when in this psalm today, when I was reading 103, I think, 6, I kind of analyzed that, and it actually came back to that, because Yosha needs to be there for all those times, and I think you said this, and it didn't resonate with me as well as it did after today's reading. And that was that if Yosha really provided a way for us to be benefited without there is no priest, there is no
No,
Ark of the Covenant, we may know where it is, but we can't have access to it. The priest can't have access to it. So, and all those things.
And if you're carrying a bunch of lamb's blood towards it, you'd probably be in trouble.
Yeah.
And try it. Do you think you can get by with bringing a lamb into your home and then butchering it inside of your home? See how that works for you.
No, the PETA people would be all over you.
Well, so would the government.
You'd be arrested. right away. So I kind of balked at that a little bit, and I said, well, that actually is quite logical. Because, and then I thought, too, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'll allow me to go just a little longer. When the priest lays his hands on the lamb, I mean, you know, and chooses it and puts the sins on him, another thought occurred to me. He is and always was saving the family. He was putting the sins of the family on the lamb. He's not putting the sins of the world on the lamb. He doesn't have to put the, he only has to put the one for those who respond. And they were his family. And it was, and so.
Yeah, no one's going to lay down their lives for a stranger that's going to spit at him.
Yeah. Well, that would be like the priest associating the sins of all the Amalekites on the lamb.
Correct.
Correct. You know, it's not there.
Right.
So, but
you're not putting the sins of the Egyptians on that lamb.
Yeah, it's not the sins of the world. It's the sins of those who respond to him.
Yeah,
correct?
I agree.
Okay. All right. Just curious. That seemed to make sense to me. Now, the other statements you made, it started to make sense to me, too, because that's we can't do what they did, but if they were doing it with all those, with access to all those things, then they were saved then.
So since this is a rhetorical question, Dode is telling us that Yahweh forgives. He removes our culpability. He frees us from all of our errant thinking, wrongdoing, erroneous statement, and distorted opinion. I'm here to tell you there's only one way that you can be freed of all of that. And that is your perspective and your foundation, your basis for understanding has to be the Torah. If that's not your foundation, your perspective, that which you use to view the world, then you have no chance of ridding yourself of errant thinking, wrongdoing, erroneous statements, or distorted opinions. That's why when people say, well, do you believe in God? I said, I don't have any beliefs.
I know.
I either know or I don't know. In the case of God, I know. It's either know or I don't know. He's also saying that Yahweh is the one who heals and restores all of our diseases and disabilities. When you think that Christianity is the plague of death, I'm rather glad he does. Only Yahweh can prolong our mortality. But even he cannot do it alone. Yes, he can wipe the slate slathered with our musings and mumblings clean, but only after we stop blabbering babble. He has the antidote for the plague of religion, but it is only effective once we stop subjecting others to the serpent's venom. Now, isn't that interesting? Most people would think, all right, if you're a Pauline Christian, you know that Paul said that I had to complete what Joseph failed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, boy, if you read his statements in Acts 21, 22, and 23, I wish I had been there, because I would have killed him. And been damn proud to have done so. But, you know, Christians say, God had to have Jesus make those sacrifices, because it's the blood of Jesus that saves. Well, when I was saying that God cannot save us alone, that is a thought that is so foreign to our ears that you could say, I don't like hearing that. But the fact is, it's true. Even God can't save us alone. We have to be willing to participate. We have to be willing to walk away from religion and politics. We have to stop babbling nonsense. It's only then that he can save us. He didn't save Abraham when he was hanging out in Ur of the Chaldeans and therefore Babylon. He didn't save Dode or have his spirit come upon him while he was in the midst of Shaul's court. God can only save us if we're able to be saved, and we're not able to be saved because we're willing to disassociate from religion and politics. Now that's really profound. Once upon a time, yeah, I was very religious. I was political, I was patriotic, and worse, I was pro-military. As a vocal advocate of each, I was headed to an eternity of incarceration in jail. But fortunately, somewhere along the way, I learned enough about these things to start questioning and then reject my affinity for each. Now, by the way, and I say these things, you know, I say, well, what a scumbag you were. God can certainly do a lot better. Well, be careful. Who's the most important of the prophets, according to God?
Moshe.
Wasn't Moshe spent the first, almost 40-plus years of his life? Wasn't he part of the royal court of Egypt? Wasn't he as wrapped up in politics as a person can be? Was part of Pharaoh's military? Had to be engrossed in the religion of the Pharaoh, or he couldn't have lived. But all he had to do was walk away from it, and that was enough. God could do the rest from there. But until he walked away, God couldn't. And yet, you know, the one thing, and it's only that, you know, there may have been other attributes, I'm sure there were, that Yahweh loved in Moshe. But there's only one that's obvious. Because it clearly wasn't the man's articulate nature. He was a mumbler. It wasn't his courage, because once he struck the Egyptian, he ran to the hills and said, no, I ain't going back there. What was the one thing that made Moshe different than everybody else on the planet? There was one thing that Moshe had done that no one else on earth had done. What was that?
Listen to what Yahweh had to say?
Well, he did that, but you know, Yahweh didn't speak to a lot of people. He went down to speak to Moshe, so it wasn't like, you know, he spoke to 200 people who rejected him. Why did he choose Moshe? There's one thing that Moshe had done that no one else on earth had done. What was it?
Well, he was part of where he was sending him. He knew everything about it. Is that what you have in Ezra?
Yeah, he was the only person on earth who actually knew firsthand at the very highest levels the religion, the politics, the militaristic nature of Egypt.
You have to be trained for that.
And had walked away from it. Therefore, he did not have to waste God's time. And you might say, oh, God's got all the time in the world. No, he doesn't. There's a 6,000-year timeline here. And the last thing God wants to do is to educate somebody on the very thing he's trying to remove us from. He doesn't want to educate somebody about politics and religion, because that's what he wants us to leave. Moshe was the one person he could go to that he didn't have to explain the politics and religion, the economics and the militaristic nature of Egypt, because the man knew it, and he knew that it was wrong, and had walked away from it. That is why Yahweh picked Moshe. You know, I'm just dumbfounded sometimes that no one seems to ask the most important questions. How are you going to understand if you don't ask the questions? I mean, okay, so he tells the story on Moshe. What do you want? Would you prefer to watch Charleston Heston raise the staff and the seas part and his hair blow, his muscles quiver? Would you prefer that? Or would you prefer knowing why Yahweh chose this man?
I'll take the why.
Yes.
Yeah.
How is the why that? How is the answer to that question? Why did Yahweh choose Moshe? Why is the answer to that question important?
Well, it tells you a lot about who he chooses for different things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that Yahweh places a lot of
priorities?
Right. Okay. Yeah, there you go. The priority of Yahweh tells you who he's chosen. Would you like to be in a position where God chooses you to do something really important? Do you like the opportunity to work with him?
Sure.
Yeah.
Then be who he's looking to work with.
Yeah.
Do you think Dodd was, I mean, Yahweh was happy with Dodd? Like he loved him?
Yeah.
He loved him a lot.
Did he work with him?
From very early.
So why wouldn't we want to know what it was about Dodd that caused Yahweh to say, that's my guy? You know how Yahweh chose him? I mean, he told Samuel, Samuel was lamenting, oh my God, how long are we going to have to endure Shaul? This is the most awful thing in the world, belly aching. And Yahweh said to him, I've heard enough of this. Stop it already. I've chosen my king. I've chosen my Messiah. Now, this is what I want you to do. Get over it. I want you to go over here to Yahweh. And I want you to have him bring out his sons until I say to you, that's the one. And I want you to anoint him. And so he brought out the eldest son and the strongest sons and the brightest sons and the most courageous. I mean, he brought them all out. And everyone, Sam said, oh, hey man, he's a handsome dude. Let's go with him. And they said, no. So, by the way, where did the one Yahweh picked come from? Where was he during this whole review of the sons experience?
Tending to the flock.
Tending the sheep.
Where was that pasture?
It was in Bethlehem.
Bethlehem.
Aha! Uh-huh. So all the prophets say here about Bethlehem?
Uh-huh.
Apply to Dodd, don't they?
I'm afraid so.
Yeah. He was in Bethlehem. What was his means of conveyance, according to the Torah, between Bethlehem and his arrival in front of Shamuel?
Donkey, of course.
Fills that prophecy too, doesn't it? So anyway, he shows up and Yahweh says, that's the one. And Yahweh anointed him, making him Messiah, the Messiah. Yahweh's Messiah. And you know what it says came upon him the moment he was Mashiach?
Ruach Kodesh,
Spirit.
Yeah, the Spirit. And it never left him.
Wow.
Isn't that special?
Really special.
So, what was it about Dodd that said that? What have we learned? Not only where he was and what he was doing, but subsequently, as you read his Psalms, don't you ever ponder the question, what is it about this guy with all of his strengths and weaknesses that would cause Yahweh to say, he's my guy. That's the one. That's my Messiah. That's my son. That's my king. That's my branch. He's going to be the shepherd of my flock. What is it about that man that caused God to love him so much? So much that he called him my beloved.
Mm-hmm. He was smart. He's a wordsmith.
We know he was really smart. I mean, the guy that can give you the ABCs of the Torah, the 119 Psalm, literally the ABCs of the Torah, going through each letter and writing eight statements about
all
each,
of it
how each letter works together to help us observe the Torah. That's funny. The guy was a real wordsmith. No question about that. So, yeah. He figured out a lot of stuff. Not everything. Man, he figured out a lot. So, he was really smart. Really articulate, too, wasn't he?
Very much so.
So
passionate. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Passionate. Courageous, right?
Yes, very brave.
Who else in Yisrael was willing to go up against Goliath?
Nobody. Not a single soul.
Not a person.
He was a fighter, wasn't he? Fought on behalf of his people.
Yes.
Yeah. He was a lover, for sure. He found women very appealing. He was a man of heartbreak, too. You know, his family, in fact, every family that we read about in the Torah, prophets and Psalms, was broken. He had heartache. Yeah, he had lots of heartache. He's just a real guy. Okay, smarter, more articulate, more courageous. And, of course, he had the perfect training to be a king of Yisrael, past and present, or past and future, as a shepherd. He could tend the ass flock. But it's fun to consider, what were the attributes of this man that caused him to be the pivotal character in human history?
Well, you know, I think it's amazing, even knowing Samuel all aside, that aspect, he just sat down and read the Torah and got all this out of it. I mean, that's...
Yes.
Wow. That is freaky good.
Right. Oh, yeah. I'm telling you that you could take... All of us who communicate regularly about our translations and interpretations and insights, and you could put us all together for 1,000 years, and we couldn't do as if we just had the Torah to work with, we couldn't do nearly as well as Dode did. We have so much more to work with than he did. You know, we have the prophets, and we have science, and we have history. There's so much more to work with than he had.
We have his work.
Yeah, we can look backwards.
Yeah. So I'm saying that, you know, that although clearly Moshe's role was infinitely more vital than what he had and God had in mind for me, I still understand what it is that God's looking for. And I realized that while I was religious, I was of no use to him. But once you walk away from those things, once you've had a sense of, in my case, I was very religious as a Christian. I was very patriotic as an American. I was even into some conspiracies. And it is by having been part of these things that you come to understand their flaws, their way that they are wrong, but the more importantly, the way they seduce people. And so you become a much more effective advocate, not only against the lies, but in favor of the truth. And you're far angrier, which is really important today. You can speak with passion and conviction against those things because you understand them. And, you know, for about 5 years, every waking moment I was exposing and condemning Islam. I was able to do it, not because I knew the Quran better than anybody else, because I understood it better. It's not because I knew Muhammad better than anybody, it's because I understood him better. And so, you know, it's we have to be effective, to have that exposure. To do what is arguably the worst job this size of hell, in my case, was to expose and condemn Muhammad, Allah, the Quran, the Hadith and Islam. You know, it's we last week talked about the Nakri and this observant foreigner. And Kirk, I think you were looking up one of these words, and in fact, I think it was in Mizmor 103.
103.
Yeah, and it took you to a passage in Devarim where it not only speaks of the Nakri and of this foreigner, but it is in Devarim 29. And in 22, it speaks him again. It says, the Nakri, who to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, shall come in a future time from a faraway place. And what he is going to do, in the middle of this statement, what he is going to do is going to help people see the plagues of that land, the sickness which will exist there. And so people might say, well, you know, it's pretty egotistical for you to be saying that that prophecy is speaking about these books and these shows. And I'm saying, are you kidding? First of all, if you want the word to apply to you, devote 20 years to doing this. Take as your first job the most deadly and miserable job on earth. Become an expert on Islam and expose and condemn it. Do a few thousand radio shows on it. Write a couple of books on it. See how you like it. And then maybe what you'll do next is expose and condemn Paul, so you'll have all Christians hate you. Another 2.5 billion of them, in addition to the 1.5 billion Muslims. And then, by the way, take on the smartest people in the world and expose and condemn rabbinic Judaism. And then try to survive in America by saying that you ought not be patriotic. You ought not support your military. You ought not be political.
Now cover your heart.
See how people respond to you. And then maybe what you want to do, if you want this role, and, I would love for there to be a thousand people fulfilling this role. But if you want to do it, are you going to spend 8 to 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, for another 15 years, where everything that you learn, you give away free? So the opportunity is wide open. By choosing a foreigner in the midst of a text that says, pay no attention to what the foreigners are doing. Those goyim, they'll lead you astray. Do not follow in their customs. Don't listen to them. Don't do what they do. And then he takes this one foreigner, this singular Nakri, and he says, you need to read what he's written. You need to act upon what he says. It's not egotistical, it's humbling. And you only get to that spot if there's something about you that Yahweh wants to work with. And if you look at who he's chosen to work with in the past, they don't have characteristics. In most cases, Dode may be the lone exception that's going to impress anybody. Moshe was not an impressive guy. Abraham wasn't an impressive guy. We know nothing about Noah, so chances are he wasn't a very impressive guy. But one thing is for darn sure, they all did listen to Yahweh. And they were all willing to act upon his instructions. And they recognized that what they were going to engage in, they had to be wholly dependent upon him. Now, for years, I was just like Dode, Yah's student. Yah was my teacher. And while that is still the essence of our relationship, somewhere along the way, he redeemed and delivered me from Sheol, offering the opportunity to live and work with him as his son, just as he had done for so many before me. And I invite everyone who is listening, who is reading these books, just as Yahweh and Dode have done, to join us. His next question would be, who redeems and delivers your life from the hideous incarnation, from the dungeon and slime pit of corruption? And before we consider that, I don't want us to shortchange anything that you all might have found, but what were your thoughts on Psalm 103:3, that first of the rhetorical questions?
I tell you, this is my second read through on these, and personally, this is hugely deep compared to where, the first time I read it. I'm saying, sometimes you have to think a little bit on what it's actually saying, and you go, my goodness, it's kind of spelling it all out for you.
Lakrotakalamata. He's going to restore and heal you from all your diseases and disabilities.
Yeah.
Every one of your ailments and impairments, all of your tormenting pains and grievous plagues, all of the rust and corrosion, the filth and scum on your name. Yeah. And I'm talking about getting a little muddy.
No.
A little rusty.
Some of the things that cure you.
Right. Religion. Politics. Governance. Patriotism. Militants. Conspiracies. And to hear about the latest conspiratorial wacko down there in El Paso, Texas. Read his manifesto.
Walmart?
Yeah, I read his manifesto. I don't know if you all read his manifesto.
I have not. No.
His manifesto was not against Jews. Hispanics. Why would you hate Hispanics? I mean, why would you hate Jews? They're God's chosen people. That sounds pretty stupid to me. But what on earth would cause you to hate Hispanics? The preponderance of Hispanics are hardworking. They're, you know, if you know anybody in horticulture, somebody that's a farmer or a rancher or something like, what you find is that there are no Caucasian Americans willing to do the jobs that Hispanics are willing to do. You know, I have a boat here in South Florida. The people that work on the boat, they're all Hispanics. Oh, they're charming. They're devoted. They're men of character. Just personally engaging. I'm befuddled as to what somebody could have against Hispanics to the point that they'd want to mass murder them. I'm not even sure with all of my work experience I've ever met a Hispanic individual that was anything but wonderful. I'm sure there are some. It's just that there aren't bad in every ethnicity, but, oh my goodness. And this guy, man, he had his manifesto. He was on to his conspiracy, and Hispanics were trying to take over the America that he wanted to restore. Don't get it. So who redeems and delivers your life from the hideous incarnation, facilitates your very existence and ability to remain alive, buying you back from the unacceptable and defiling situation, freeing your soul from bondage and slavery, by purchasing you, ransoming you as a kinsman redeemer, Ga'al J'ata, from the dungeon in the slime pit of corruption, out of the putrid poison of decay and decomposition associated with Sheol. I can tell you, I've spent my time in Men Shakoth, in that putrid poison of decay, that slime pit of corruption. You want to know what it's like? Spend 2 years of your life wrestling with the perverse nature of Paul.
Oh.
His letters. And, you know, I wrote a 1,300-page book on him, and I just barely scratched the surface of how sick that man was. You want to do something that's equally as bad? We're going to the Quran chronologically and set it into Muhammad's, the context of Muhammad's life through the Hadith. You want to wallow in a slime pit? Do that for 5 years. You want to know why God's so sick and tired of this world as it is? Study those religions. So who redeems us, delivers us from the hideous incarnation? You know, I was headed to Sheol. Well, I don't think either of you guys were, because you were not advocates for religion or politics, but I was headed there. I was an advocate for both. And I am so glad that God's instructions are written in the imperfect, so all we have to do is stop.
time walk away.
To walk away like Abraham did, like Moshe did. And, you know, you guys are more like Dode. You were doing really good things, and life became better. But the Sheol is a hideous incarnation. Who envelops and crowns you in loyal and steadfast love and unfailing kindness in addition to compassion and mercy. No, it's a from and to with God. From Mitzrayim to the Promised Land. From Babylon to his home. It's always from and to. From the hideous incarnation to a position where you're steadfastly loved and embraced with unfailing kindness, mercy, and compassion. From the worst thing you can imagine to the best thing you can perceive.
Yeah.
It's always from to.
I like the meaning of Rephaim where it says to cradle in one's arms in order to protect and cherish. What a statement. I mean,
yes.
His words, once again, it's those words, so it's just, wow, from the slime pit to that.
From the slime pit to that. Yeah, from being in the worst possible situation to being in the best. Since it sounds a bit pretentious, it isn't something I'm comfortable reading, but it is undeniable. When we are adopted into Yahweh's family, we become royalty, complete with crowns. Even beyond the royal trapping, God surrounds us in his love by enveloping us in his light, encompassing us within his set-apart spirit. The garment of light is what makes us perfect in God's eyes, because where there's light, there's no darkness. As light, the Spirit doesn't cover over our flaws and failings, but instead eliminates them. It is but a shadow among the brilliance being conveyed, but this is prophetic because Yahweh was actually placed in a lightless dungeon, Yahusha was, by the religious authorities in Jerusalem, and was symbolic of what his soul, Yahweh's soul in particular, would endure on the feast of unyeasted bread to free us from Sheol. Now, most of us, like Dode, and just like Dode, find our relationship with Yahweh, Shabbat, abundantly satisfying. I appreciate all of the good he has done for me and for so many others. And so the next rhetorical question is, who abundantly satisfies? You with that which is good, so that you are reaffirmed, restored, and renewed, becoming similar to a perpetual youth and winged being which can take flight. Well, that's a far cry from the last two. This is taking us to another level. Abundantly satisfied in Shabbat provides overwhelming contentment and satisfaction, fulfilling the vow to enrich and empower. You, with what is Tob, good, with the trappings and ornamentation, as the Tob Adi, which are prosperous and beautiful, joyful and festive, appropriate and agreeable, so that you are reaffirmed, restored, and renewed. Kadosh. Kadosh is one of those great words. It means, you know, to be renewed, to be restored is the basis of the timing for the Moed, or based upon moon phases being the light of the new moon being renewed and restored, such that you are rehabilitated and returned to the original intended state, such that the relationship is affirmed and reestablished, becoming similar to, this is Na'um Random, indefinitely and eternally young, the fountain of youth, living forever, with all the vitality and freedom of a teenager prior to adult responsibilities. You know, we always kid and said it's too bad that youth is wasted on the young.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time in our lives where we were free of work responsibilities, where we were, where our physical prowess was at a level way beyond what it is for most of us now.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine being back in that condition, but empowered a billion times with what we know now? Can you imagine being back in high school, knowing what we know now? Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't that be extraordinary? As for me, I don't want to go back. I'm much happier with flawed me and older me now. Just because I would be concerned, anxious, but I wouldn't make all the right decisions to end up and back in this spot. And I like where we are.
I just like to have.
I don't want to go back in time, but if I can take that body back, you have the
8 years
of age.
Yeah. I'd like to have those eyes back. That shoulder back so it doesn't ache, those eyes so they don't itch and aren't weak, and the knees and the back and all of it. And the elasticity of our brains and ability to absorb information and to learn. We're so elastic then. And that's the way I was going to look at us, is perpetual youth.
Wow.
Young and vital. Open to learning. Forever. With the youthful enthusiasm. And, of course, we're going to be like a winged being which can take flight because we won't be affected by gravity anymore. We'll be able to travel at unbelievable speeds through the universe. Yeah, so, marvelous, you know. So just because God isn't impressed with someone who is particularly good, he is committed to providing his children with everything we could ever want, the most important of which is to restore and renew our soul. Enriched and empowered, we will soar like we had the wings of eagles. One of the many things we've come to know and love about Yah is his propensity to be fair, to consistently do what is right, so that we can always trust him. We can be right because he's right. The standard by which Dode was deemed right applies to all of us, including God himself. This is the next line of Mizmor 103. Yahweh does what is right, engaging honestly and fairly. Asha Sadaka. He acts appropriately, honorably, and correctly, working justly, productively, and beneficially, so as to vindicate, showing good judgment and executing justice, while Mishpat, appropriately resolving disputes, while making informed and rational decisions on behalf of all who are unjustly exploited and contentiously mistreated. Everyone who is defrauded, oppressed, treacherously extorted and cheated, disadvantaged and suffering ill treatment. Now, this is an easy passage to misinterpret, particularly this last statement. Yahweh did not say that he was going to save everyone who has been defrauded, exploited, or oppressed. Only that he would show good judgment and executing justice on their behalf. This means that he will hold those who mistreated them, who extorted them, who politically subjugated them, those who religiously misled them, those who militarily oppressed them, or economically enslaved them, accountable. He isn't going to let the perpetrators go unpunished, said another way. While the souls of those victimized simply fade away, the perpetrators will be sent away, enduring an eternity in Sheol. That's my interpretation of that statement. I'd love to hear your guys.
Yeah.
makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, it truly, truly does.
So Yahweh's going to do what's right. He's going to engage honestly and fairly, showing good judgment and executing justice on behalf of all who are unjustly exploited. And continually, contentiously mistreated. It goes back to my conclusion, if you will. I think it is underscored time and time again in those Psalms. At least I'm seeing it in those Psalms, and everyone I translate. And I'm just completing the seventh now. That Yahweh is going to do something on behalf of all of those people who have suffered, who have been misled by those who are religious and political. And the way that he can do that, I think there's only one way he can do that, is to allow them to witness his
trial and
rebuke, right, his sentencing of those who have inflicted so much pain. He's going to let them witness that, and that will bring closure. It's the only way to be just. If you had a society that just loved everybody, that's our problem. We just got to get rid of hate. Even Trump said it. The reason that the Walmart 18, that's the number 22, whatever the number were killed, is because of hate. We just have to stop hating. If we could only love enough, everybody would be hunky-dory. Oh, what God is saying that now.
Hate appropriately.
Didn't work there.
Those who endured the Holocaust ought to hate those who perpetrated it. The child who was raped ought to hate, not forgive, the rapist. If someone murdered one of my sons, you wouldn't find a forgiving father, but one who would seek vengeance. To be just, we need to be like you. We need to use the tools that we have to expose and condemn those that have harmed others. And we don't have the right to life or death. We don't have the right to physically harm anyone. But what we have is our words. And that's Yahweh's primary tool. You know, these trials, when he exposes and condemns these people, he's going to use words. Words are powerful. And so many people, like the idiot down there in El Paso. I guess he's from Dallas. He was incapable of using his words. And that's what we need to do. The most powerful implements in the universe, words. That's why I say to people who read Prophet of Doom, you know, you ought not hate Muslims, you ought to feel pity for them. You ought to hate what Islam inspires. And in reading Prophet of Doom, it's not the purpose of the book to cause anyone to be violent. In fact, just the opposite. To use your words to oppose jihad. And so, that's what we're being called to do. If we want to be like Yahweh, then we should do what's right. Engaging honestly and fairly. Showing good judgment. Appropriately resolving disputes while making informed and rational decisions, especially on behalf of all who are unjustly exploited and contentiously mistreated. We ought to speak out against Christianity and Islam and Judaism and all of the isms of economics and patriotism. Because of all the harm they've inflicted on others. It's our responsibility to hold the perpetrators accountable, to tell the truth. go beyond our words. And we ought to constantly encourage others to learn based upon the words and to convey the same words once they come to understand them. Words are powerful enough. Words are what led all of us away from whatever it is that we put our faith in. And coming to know Yahweh, it is through words. He is only known through His words. And so we ought to wield them wisely. In fact, it says, He made known His ways to Moshe through His interactions with the children of Israel. Well, how did He make His ways known to Moshe?
Dabarim. Talking words.
Words. Words. Dabarim. Words. That's why the book's called Dabarim. Words. Now, He didn't make Himself known to Moshe because there was a big fire on the top of the mountain.
No, that was Moshe.
Words.
Yeah.
Words. It's the Torah.
Yeah.
All words. You know, I'm accused all the time of having a love affair, making a religion out of words. You know, it's, I don't like the term religion. It's true.
No.
It's what we got.
But when they're Yah's words, shouldn't we all?
Yeah.
And when somebody accuses me of that, I'll say yes, and what about you?
Yeah. Why don't you join us?
Yeah, join us. Isn't that the most fun part of your week is valuing a word so much that you'll spend an hour or so just trying to understand it and appreciate it?
It's amazingly rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, in this particular case, one of my very favorite words is right here. It's the word that I've chose to apply to so many things. He made known as Yada. He acknowledged and made us aware so that we can become familiar with disclosing and revealing all Yada. Hifl and perfect. Hifl and perfect is that the Yahweh, the subject, puts the object, which should be, in this case, His ways, into action, such that His ways come to be symbolic of who He is. And then the imperfect says that He does it consistently with ongoing implications. And He doesn't say here that He made His ways known to Paul or Muhammad or even Jesus or Joseph Smith or L. Ron Hubbard in Scientology or Akiba as the founder of rabbinical Judaism. Said He made His words known to Moshe. Well, where did Moshe write His words?
In the Torah. Scroll, yeah.
So, if you're not reading the Torah, you're not reading Yahweh's words, are you?
Can't happen.
Yep. Through His interactions with, through His actions and deeds, His practices and achievements, His effectiveness and engagements, His work and achievements with the children of Israel. And so, if you want to know about Him, you ought to pay attention to what He did with the children of Israel, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the first thing He did? He sent Moshe there to draw them out, introduce Himself by name. What did He do? He condemned, He exposed and condemned religion and politics, militarism, mocked it. What did He do? He laid out a path to go from human subjugation and oppression, religious and political subjugation and oppression, to freedom and the prophet and the promised land. And that path began with a doorway called Pesach.
Right.
Yeah, followed by the threshold of unyeasted bread. through Pukutim firstborn children, such that 7 sevens later he would reveal the Torah on Shavuot, the promise of seven. That's what he made known. Well, this is a good stopping place, gentlemen. Well, we can pick this up this time next week.
Okay.
This particular psalm is another one of my favorites. I'm delighted to have read it, delighted to have studied it, delighted to be able to share it. It's like every one of those psalms. It's like opening a treasure chest where the jewels are the words that he has chosen.
Yeah. They are rich.
And who is trumpeting Moshe here? Just to put things in perspective, one Zeroa to another.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's though that is trumpeting the. He's telling us where he went to study the Word of God.
Where he was going, wants to go.
Moshe. Yeah. By the way, what does Moshe mean?
To draw out.
Right. To draw out. It doesn't mean to draw in, does it?
No,
it means to go in.
All that stuff.
Right.
Walk away.
It means to draw out.
First
that was his purpose.
Feel about Abraham. Walk away.
Right. You know, there's two reasons that I have learned that Yahweh constantly says, I am Yahweh your God, who delivered you from slavery in the crucibles of Egypt. Now, and that's really important to understand why he said that, because when he wrote those words in stone and first spoke them, there isn't a single person who benefited from them.
Mm-hmm.
Duh. They had all been on the journey with him. They had firsthand experience that Yahweh had freed them from the crucibles of religious and political freedom and was bringing them to the promised land.
Yeah,
there's not one of them that needed God to tell them that.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So why did he say it, and why did he repeat it?
So we could read it.
Right.
Yep.
Because not of because of that Exodus, but because of the Exodus that needs to take place prior to his return.
Yeah.
Israel and the world at large needs to walk away from politics and religion. Militarism and conspiracy. There needs to be another Exodus, this one from Babylon. That's why the parting words in Revelation and the words that reverberate through the prophets is come out of Babylon, my people. As a matter of fact, what I learned rewriting the terms volume of an introduction to God. And it's now available as a standalone book from on Amazon, and as far as the rest. But beyond that, I'm sure it'll be up on the other sites here shortly. But one of the things that was really profoundly important about that is, do you know that there's two presentations of the Ten Statements, not just the one in Shemot, the Exodus?
Yes, well, I know now.
Yes, one in Davarim, Davarim 5. And you know that the presentation of the Ten Statements in Davarim 5 is not the same as the one in Exodus 20.
Really?
And you know what the primary difference is? There are two differences. One important for those who are really paying attention, and one profound. The little thing is that every reference to father and mother in the second of the seven instructions that are written on that second tablet is that which is associated with your father and mother. So it tells us that he's not talking about our earthly parents, but instead about our heavenly father and spiritual mother.
That's a nice confirmation.
Yeah, it's a really nice confirmation. If you read it, I think I've sent it out to everybody. It's really a wonderful confirmation of that idea. But the big change is how Yahweh presents the Shabbat. The Shabbat is not a time to be idle. It's a time to celebrate and act upon an Exodus. It's a time to appreciate why God wants us to walk away from political and human political and religious games. Because, not because of that first Exodus, but because of the second Exodus. Just as there's a second coming of Dodd, there is a second Exodus. And it needs to transpire now. And he's calling his people out of Babel, the three Babylons, political, religious, and geographic. America, the Roman Catholic Church, and the lands now infected by Islam. He's calling his people home. The second Exodus. And so, in his explanation of Shabbat, he says specifically, you know, you need to remember, as it relates to the Shabbat, that I called you out of the crucibles of Egypt where you were a slave. And so what does that have to do with the Shabbat? Everything. Because what is the year 6,000 to year 7,000? Isn't it a Shabbat? The beginning of the seventh day? Isn't the the millennial celebration of Sukkah, it's a Shabbat. Prior to the Shabbat, there needs to be an Exodus. And I think it was just really astounding to me. Is that, you know, Solomon, when he presents the Nagri, quoted Yahweh's expanded explanation of the Shabbat, cited from it, which tells you that the purpose of an Nagri, this observant foreigner, that he serves a role in calling Yah's people out of Babylon, which is what the Debatim explanation and prophecy that you you found as you were translating words. Mm-hmm. So that's the purpose. We're here to call God's people home, and we don't have a lot of time left in the summer. Going into the fall of 2019, because it's all over in 2033. And you can't wait that long because too few people are going to survive between now and then. And there comes a point, a dividing point, in the midst of the time of Jacob's trouble, where those who have not embraced the covenant will not have the opportunity.
No, it's over. You want you to take the mark or whatever that symbolism is.
Yes.
You've already committed.
Yeah.
You can't go back. He says that it sets the record straight.
That's correct. And there are so many influences that would try to lead people astray. Because at this point, the Torahless one would appeal to Muslims and Christians and socialist secular humanists. So the most of the world is going to be automatically aligned with and impassioned by. I mean, you think that the newsreels of Germans cheering a motorcade with Adolf Hitler was something.
Oh, the Zetal.
Yeah, which is the Torahless one. And all the religious and political idiots of the world cheering him. Mm. You know, just as they do the Pope when he comes by in his Pope mobile.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing how the world is exuberant for evil, and yet completely nonplussed when it comes to the things of Yah. Well, gentlemen, I can't wait to be with you next week. We'll continue through the 103rd Mizmor, and there's so much else to know and to share.
Okay, look forward to it. Thank you, JB.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, thank you.
Shabbat shalom.
May God bless. Shabbat shalom. Good night.
Shalom.
Shalom.